wanted to say a few words about the use of thoughts in the Vipassana and insight meditation as we're practicing. And so there's a way to use the thinking mind that it can be really helpful as we're practicing. Well, first I'll say, in Buddhist psychology, it seems like there's three modes of understanding reality. One is information, like today I'll be presenting a little bit of information. There's another level of understanding, which is reflection. So I'm reflecting on something with my own thoughts, I'm contemplating, thinking about something. And then there's the level we call meditation. A level that is not often visited by people or not valued in the dominant culture, maybe. But it's a very particular way to gain understanding. It's by direct, high-quality contact. So it's not conceptual, it's pre-verbal. It's a felt sense. We feel the mind state that is there. We feel it, and we learn how to hold it, to be with it. We learn if it's a how it's detrimental to us, or how it's liberating, it's felt. So that's a very particular kind of intelligence. And so it might take a little work to find the frequency, we could almost say, there. The way that we can use the thinking mind in kind of the, so we could say, the purest kind of Vipassana practice, is there's a practice called labeling or noting that some of you know. And so what it is that I take a mental note, I name what is happening, and the way it's presented, it's the words become a little bit of a frame to invite me to feel the experience. So as I'm sitting here, there could be the note, hands. And that's to invite silence and feeling of the hands, of breathing in, out, is to feel what is happening, or hearing, to open up that window, we could say. So as we walk, for example, we could say stepping, or lifting the foot. And so it's not so, it's really to bring silence. So we don't want to become discursive, you know. In meditation, if there's more than two sentences with subject, verb, complement, we might be in another area. So it's good to at least use this. Anything that I say is basically used to go do some research, you know, to help us understand what's happening and see for ourselves. And so that's one way. Another way that I see, I'm talking maybe from my own practice and things I've seen, another way to use the thinking mind, words, concepts, is asking a question. And so we've done this a number of times here, like I use a lot the question, can this be okay? Can this be known? What it's inviting is to go check. Can it be okay? Can it be felt as okay that there's discomfort? Can it be known, discomfort? So the question is leading to silence, or is answered by presence, silent, attentive presence. This is meditation, mindfulness. So it's good to maybe know this, because if we're sitting here thinking about the Dharma, it's called thinking. Yeah? So we want to know, like being aware in the present time means if there is a mental formation, we know it's a mental formation. Mm-hmm. That's a kind of a clarity. Anushka Fernando Poulet, and I think I referred to her colleague that I like to hear a Dharma. Anushka did this very simple experiment the other day, and like I could see the work that I have to do. Because she was saying, if you want, we can try it. She was saying, I invite you to think about your shoes. Think about your shoes that are here. You might see them. Yeah. So, and then she said, it's not your shoes. It's a thought. And I was sitting next to her, and I was like, no, this is my shoes. And I knew exactly what she was doing. Like, she was helping me and us discern between things that are not the same thing, but that we confuse one for the other, and we amalgamate, maybe. And that's what wisdom is, partly, is the capacity to know that a thought is a thought. You know, as Munindraji would say, the thought of your mother are not your mother. You know, and to discern this, and so we want to be aware that the thought has arisen. Otherwise, we're just there having the conversation with the other person, and we might be angry at them after. They were not there for the conversation. They were self-providing, you know. But still, it's very easy to develop resentment for something somebody could have said. You know? We're very self-sufficient in a way. You know? And so to start to recognize that a thought has arisen, and this is a mental event, it's an ephemeral mental event. You know? And so we can use the thinking to help us feel, discover reality as it is. And so as we do that, and sometimes we feel that we don't need that. It can be a hindrance, the noting, for example. Because the mind is feeling things just as they are. There's no word for it. It feels exactly like this right now. And sometimes that's the mental note I'll take. Oh, it feels like this right now. Exactly like this. That's how it is right now. Like this. Not more defined than that, but inviting equanimity and closeness. And so the questioning also can go further. Like one question, when the mind is extremely quiet, things are maybe neutral, even, you know, not so much reactivity. Presence being established. That's when sometimes I don't have to do that. I can just stay there and get more acquainted with calm. Like being pressed in a way by calm. It's good for this, particularly this system, to be pressed by calm. To have like kind of almost establishing a felt memory. Oh yeah, the mind is capable of that. Or be impressed, become intimate with ease, acceptance, or joy. It's good for the mind to, when these mind states arise, to let them be known. But like a type of question that I find very, very powerful in terms of inquiry, to bring the level of interest in reality, curiosity about reality, but there has to be the good inner conditions, so when the inner conditions are there, the mind is not so discursive, it's calm, it's really in the listening mode, stable, able to feel what is there, then I might say, who is breathing? So there's a question there, who is breathing? Who is hearing? Who is sitting? Who is meditating? One question like this. And then I don't want to start explaining who. You know, it's not, the answer is not going to come from words. That that's a way to actually investigate in a non-conceptual way, in a felt sense, can actually, I don't know, delineate or this being, or find out that something else. In that quiet listening, we want to, reviewing a little bit here, we want, there's kind of two kinds of wisdom. That's one way that it's presented, two different kinds of discernment or wisdom. So one is to recognize for ourselves in a felt sense, in experience, what are the good qualities of mind that are helpful, to define that for ourselves. You know, there might be lists and things like this, but now it's being there in the field and to actually recognize for ourselves. That's why we want to be quiet and available and not caught in preferences or stories. And we want to be attentive so we can actually be touched by the states of the mind. And the Buddha is instructing us to do this externally and internally. So one of the interpretations of that is that we're invited to become aware of the liberating or entangling nature of mind states inside ourselves and in others. I mean, for everything that we've talked about, the Buddha keeps repeating internally and externally. So if we take it as meaning, for the breath, it would be my breath, but also as I'm with this person, whoever it is, their breath, or their posture, because it's going to indicate a lot. Huh? There's something I can find in the sudden movement of the face or the body, you know, so being aware, and in a non-judgmental way. That's interesting, that's very important to go back to the world, you know, because I could come to a 2 days of practice, become really mindful of what's happening inside of me, and then that could go and meet people and become self-righteous, you know? I'm so mindful right now and you're so not. You know? And that would not be the practice. The practice is that there is quality of presence in this being, you know? Or there isn't. There's agitation, but not in a judgmental way, in a way that we recognize what is there in the field, you know, and how to be with it. And then same thing with the beautiful qualities of mind. In the practice, it's this art to actually recognize it in others and to have enough of a calm and attention to actually see, wow, there is generosity here, benevolence, there is listening, there is non-reactivity, there is all these different qualities. So, and notice the impact it has. You know, you're in a meeting and somebody brings in, contributes honesty. And you can feel, oops, that's the contribution and the effect of that contribution. You know? And if the opposite is offered and it's felt, then we can become, look at that, you know, aggression, what it creates, how bodies contract, you know, silence, taboo, whatever happens, you know. So interesting to see how it's impacting the film. And so, in a way, for me, I've seen many times where I've had in a way, gratitude, saying like, oh my God, I'm so happy I can witness this. I so don't want to contribute that. I have to be so aware right now, because I might be a perpetrator also of this. You know, and because I'm attuned now, I can feel the effect of this. I really want to be impressed by that. This is mindfulness for me. Let me be really here now. Is that what you want to contribute, Pascal? Be really attentive, so it registered in a really felt way. So one kind of wisdom is the recognition of the different energies or mind states or qualities of mind that are helpful. So in the teaching, and we can check it out for ourselves, it says, seems to be saying that a mind that has both calm in it, composure, so that is calm, that is non-reactive, that is steady, gathered instead of scattered, a mind that is calm and energized, meaning curious, engaged with what's happening, is a really good mind for insight, but also a good mind to learn anything, or to be in difficulty, or to be in beauty. So to me, from the practice of these retreats and stuff that I gather, is that it's going to be helpful if I'm alone, if I'm with people, if I'm that I stay attuned to what's happening, reading, you know, what is not seen, what is not named, what who's not included, and what, you know, stay awake and in a non-judgmental way. To see. My sense is when we start talking about, I don't know, climate change, for example, does that seem fitting to have a really calm, curious mind? Like, what is it to live on this planet? You know, what's happening? How are we, I don't know, consuming, or how are we, what kind of policies, what are we valuing? What, you know, it seems like it need a lot of inquiry, a lot of being really interested in what's happening and calm. Otherwise, you know, I'll fall into despair, reactivity, lack of sleep, etc. You know, if I want awakening, it's probably good to be very attentive to how I'm going away from it or closer to it somehow. So how to be in the world so it's beneficial for myself and others. So that's why we're doing this mindfulness, to clarify this, how to be with you know, the challenges, the collectivity, the alone time. So we want to discover how to be in the world, the inner world and the outer world. And the other kind of wisdom, so one wisdom is about the mind states, which ones are helpful, which ones are not so helpful. You know, in Buddhist psychology it says hatred, never helpful. But we have to go clarify this for ourselves, you know, because we might be mistaken here and there, or maybe we want to clarify something. You know, like Joanna Macy, some of you know Joanna Macy, American activist. Wouldn't be surprised, she would be in her 90s now. I don't know, I might be mistaken. You know, practicing with her, I was really interested in how she talks about a particular kind of anger that is... that is a passion for justice, you know? And I think the way, at least when I was with her, she was presenting it, is that she wants that kind of anger. She wants it, that, you know? And so that's a nuance that she found for herself. And maybe she still have that view or not. As we know, views do change. And so it's been interesting for me to consider this. You know, what do I want to be motivated by? My take these days is a little different. I actually want to be, I find a lot of energy and clarity. And so if I see something that doesn't fit, is abuse or is abusive, or like I feel that inside of me I can tap into sometimes like a kind of clarity that has no anger in it, but it has something, some very powerful energy in it. You know, I know exactly where the line is, you know, and the boundary, and it seems like it's a helpful, you know, but I stay tuned, because I might discover something about it, you know. So this is one kind of wisdom. Another kind of wisdom is, we've talked about this already, is the the recognition of the, I want to say, I'll put some words there that point to or are in the vicinity of, you know, but to be able to recognize the unstable, unreliable, conditional nature of phenomena. So, for example, we come here to sit, we want to be calm, but that's not what's there. What's there is something else, obsession. So we discover that we don't have exact control over life, certainly not the others, but not even inner exactly. So that's a really important information, to know that things don't follow my will. Because if I believe this, or wish this, or think it should be, then it's going to be extremely frustrating. But to actually discover that things happen when the conditions come together for them to happen is extremely important. In this way, that's the ground, we could say, of equanimity. Being stable comes not from a vacuum, it comes from a deep understanding that things are conditional. When the conditions are there, they happen. If the conditions are not there, they don't happen. So although I want peace in the world, and I could get worked up about it, why human beings are so fucked up, you know, why isn't that? It doesn't work like this. So I can find some calm. Of course, it's not happening because the conditions are not right. And so how can I contribute, knowing that as long as the conditions are not right, it's not going to happen? But I'm a part of the equation. And so, so things are conditional. So here we sit and walk and sit and walk to become more acquainted with this. And so we see things disappear, you know, you might have had a wave of calm, or I don't know how, you know, some point it's just benevolent in the mind and calm gathered, and then whoops, finished, the mind contracts around something, you know, I want to stay like this forever, it just contracted, you know, and we see this, we discover this, the ephemeral nature, flickering nature of experience. We are called to become intimate with this. And one of the ways that it works is this kind of high quality, regular high quality encounter with the evanescent, ephemeral, mirage-like nature of experience. Is in the text, the image is there's a boat. It's tied to a pier. Like let's say here, and the boat is here, and the rope is this friction, like it's against the side of the pier like this. So this is our practice. Our practice is to stay attentive to the arising and disappearance of things, you know, like this, and at some point, check, it lets go, you know. So it's the constancy, continuation, in the awareness attuned to the ephemeral nature of event. The mind will understand deeply that all things arise and pass, And this is extremely powerful thing. Like this, at the level of information, like this, it looks like information. Like, oh yeah, everything passes. Yeah, I got that information in my first Buddhist class, you know, or something. But what we're talking about is at a different level, that we've experienced it again and again and again. So when one day we go in the doctor's office and the doctor says, health is gone, we'll be able to say, of course it was not going to stay. We won't go into why me, which makes total sense for an untrained mind like ours, you know. But if we've done the work, it might be, there might be a passage, it's going to be alive anyway, but it might be easier to recognize, of course, death, of course, disease, of course, end of relationship, of course, end of employment, of course, you know, that identity is gone, you know, of being, I don't know what, in the world, you know. Of course, I've noticed that things do pass. Ah. It's extremely delicate, but very freeing to be aligned with reality instead of being confused about it. You know, that it's my health and it should keep on going, or my youth, or my memory, or my sight, or my mobility, or my whatever it is. You know? When we sit here, we see things being so flickering and changing. That deeply we get to understand, it takes time, maybe a few lifetimes, to understand, wow, things are there. When they're so there that we don't even question their fluctuating nature. But if we've done our work, we will know that things are ephemeral and they change. And it's very, very natural that they do so. It'll go further. We'll even understand that things are not that personal. So I'm circling back to the first thing I described about my pain and the pain, you know. And suddenly there is, I don't know, scatteredness. It's not like, oh, I'm so agitated and scattered. No, there is, of course. In nature there is scatteredness. It does happen. When the conditions are right, there is scatteredness. And so there's something that is released in terms of ownership, wrong ownership, appropriation, colonization. Maybe we could use words like this for this system even. And I like, is it Ryokan that says, last year, stupid monk, this year, all the same. So, where's the freedom in that? In letting go of ownership, you know? That's what I hear. Last year I was so foolish, and this year I still am. But I don't make a personal case out of it. You know, I keep practicing, I'm not demanding. I've been practicing now for 3 retreats. I should be much more further along. No, that doesn't describe myself, it describes the conditions. No. This is not easy stuff. So I'm also talking about ways that I find this practice applicable. That's the idea. You come for 2 days on retreat, you know, and then whatever the length of the retreat, it is going to end one day. You know, and so the idea is to bring it in the world. So if I go back to these qualities we're developing of being stable, of being able to be with discomfort. such a gift for ourselves and others. The capacity to be in discomfort is so powerful for somebody who's looking, who's interested in freedom, because there's going to be a lot of cognitive dissonance. No? We'll be here and we'll, you know, we'll see how the mind is retard in French, is, you know, does little things, you know, it'll become obvious because we're there. We'll go from the idea that we're a good person, and then we'll see little movements of the mind that are not so pretty, you know. And so if we're able to be with discomfort, then we'll be able to go visit the shadow side, we could say, or include it. And so it's not going to be active in, you know, in the unconsciously, you know, it'll be at the surface. But also, I think collectively, you know, to actually be able collectively to go and look at how, you know, culture. So, you know, on the first day I was talking about, you know, maybe Canada, the beautiful project of Canada. You know, and so if a mind, or several minds are able to actually be calm, honest, attentive, you know, they'll be able to see the shadow side of Canada. You know, and not just, no, Canada is a beautiful country, what do you mean? And get all like confused and agitated and, you know, defensive and aggressive even. No, we go, what's that? So, and then there's more chance that collectively we can make maybe that country something that is really takes care of everyone in it, or its environment, or, you know, we won't be deluded. So that's very powerful, to go in a relationship and with calm, and any relationship, and say, let's look at this relationship with calm, steadiness, and look, how is this relationship nurturing for everyone in it, you know? And how is it limiting? It takes courage, it takes the capacity to be with discomfort, not knowing, confused, being able to be confused, you know? Cause so often in confusion, we don't want confusion, we want, you know? But sometimes it's really important to be confused for a little while. So that's the kind of thing we're developing here. Maybe last thing I'll name is, as I understand it, is, you know, as in sitting and practicing, what I'm becoming aware of is the confusion in this mind, how it's moved by all kinds of things, all kinds of impressions and conditionings and false views, you know. It's and so one level of protection is the precepts. To say, like, there's a recognition, okay, there's confusion in this being. Sometimes it'll think, this being, that it needs absolutely this thing to be happy. So we call this is greed, confusion. It'll really think that this thing is going to give it happiness. And it might be ready to actually lie a little bit, or reorganize reality, or, you know, not follow exactly the rules, because it really thinks it's going to get it, you know. So not having clarified this totally, you know, that things are unstable and they can't provide, that, you know, once I've clarified this deeply, that events and phenomena and things are not that worthy of, you know, breaking the rules, and they're probably not going to satisfy that much, you know, the allure, the falls. But I'm still a little bit confused about this. So there's things I think I really need to get, you know? And so I put a line of protection. I say, there might be confusion in this being, you know. Sometimes it might be moved by hatred, you know, suddenly, big reactivity. I'm going to put a line of defense for at least for others, for self also. But you know, the use of speech, I'm really going to question this and look at the Buddhist precepts around this as a protection, you know, or actions or sexual energy, how to use sexual energy, etc. And so there's that level of protection. And another kind of protection that we have is, you know, when I talked about this, the mind becoming contented for a few moments in walking or in sitting, you know, greed falls away, hatred falls away, aversion falls. For a few moments, the mind is protected. It's a momentary protection, protected by calm. There's still confusion in the mind, but it's hidden now, because the mind is just gathered in quiet concentration. That's really good. You know, it can become really happy in there or quiet, but it doesn't do the job completely. It's momentary. That's another kind of protection that we have for our mind, is we can go and sit and follow the breath. Some of us can do this, follow the breath, and then the mind gets really quiet. All trouble vanishes. It's really good to have access to this. But that's not wisdom. The mind is gathered for a little while, and then there's a sound, and we get irritated again. Like, who's breaking my concentration or my meditation, you know? And so that's a level of protection we have. And the last level of protection is what we're doing inside Vipassana. We're actually going in to remove the mistaken views. One of the mistaken views, one of the false projections, is we project on things satisfaction. When I get this, I'm going to be satisfied. And so here we develop a quality of attention that can reveal, is that satisfying? It's not to become cynical and disconnected and nothing is satisfying. It's just to remove the glare, the false... disenchantment. It's a very positive experience of the mind, disenchantment, as when we're under a spell and we're freed from the spell. I don't know if you've experienced this in the past. You know, this is going to be so satisfying, then you get it, then, you know, yeah, but, you know. And so by paying attention, we clarified this also, that things might look really alluring. You know, when we come close to them, usually they're unstable. You know, they can't provide exactly like this. You know, it doesn't solve everything. Have you have something solve everything? Yeah, that's why we're here. Because we haven't found that thing. You know, sometimes Joseph would say that often on retreat, is the next thought going to solve everything? You know, it's just the delusion we have. You know, we keep thinking about this, thinking about that. You know, there's a delusion that we think, do we really think the next thought is going to provide it? No, that's not in the nature of thoughts or relationships or career, or, you know, this, it's not in its nature to provide completely. It doesn't do that. I like that news, that bad news. I like it a lot. It's freeing. That's how it feels to me. Oh my God, so freeing. And I can have or not have, or, you know, be led by something else, you know, meaning, sense, rather than having, acquiring. Anyway, all things to be clarified over a few decades of practice. So what if we took just a moment here to let the words dissolve? for just a moment, freeing, maybe freeing life from our expectations and projections. Allowing it to be just as it is. It's not you who's going to be liberated, it's everything else. Freeing life from our grip. So Saturday came and went, and so Sunday came and is passing. So I invite you to not miss the end of the retreat, because often the mind will want to move on to the next thing. And of course we're free to do that, but there's value in staying and seeing things end. Noticing the ending and not following the agitation that looks for new thoughts, new events, new activities, new sights. The mind can really be greedy for sensations and newness in some form.